Welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life, produced by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. We all want to live longer, healthier lives, right? But it's not just about adding years. It's about making sure those years truly count. We want them to be full of energy, mental sharpness, and good times. Unfortunately, though, many people who live long lives end up developing dementia. In fact, it affects one in two people over the age of 85, more than 55 million people today, and the numbers just keep going up every year. So how can we change that? Well, there's scientific evidence that shows that the foods we eat have a direct impact on our brain function, today and in the future. How clearly you think, how much energy you have, how you feel, even your mood is affected by the food you eat. Also, we know that chronic high blood pressure levels increase the risk of dementia, which is why dementia is even sometimes referred to as type 3 diabetes. The good news is that means we have some control over how healthy our brains will be in the future.
If you are in your 40s and your 50s, the time is now to start taking action to prevent these diseases. These take decades to develop. So you need to start now, even better if you're in your 20s or 30s, and with your children too.
Join us for some food for thought and learn how you can choose the foods that will optimize your brain health and your future. The purpose of this podcast is to foster discussion, not to provide advice. The information shared should never be used as an alternative to obtaining personalized advice from a healthcare professional, and listeners should seek such advice independently if they have any questions related to their physical or mental health. This podcast hosts different viewpoints, and the opinions of the speakers do not necessarily reflect the views of HPE. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life. I'm Bob Peacock, and I'm glad you're here. For decades, we've known that foods are linked to numerous health problems like obesity, an increased risk of diabetes, even cancer. And more recently, numerous scientific studies have shown that what we eat can also have a big impact on our minds. Diet and dietary supplements have played a major role in some recent groundbreaking studies like Dr. Dale Bredesen's protocol, which he says could actually end Alzheimer's once and for all, and Dr. Dean Ornish's program for reversing heart disease. In fact, Dr. Ornish now says that what's good for your heart is good for your brain as well. So, what foods should we be eating for optimal brain health? And which one should we avoid? Today, we're going to find out. Today's guest is Brenda Navin, a registered dietitian and founder and president of Launch My Health, which delivers nutrition information, cooking programs, and recipes to its online members. And that includes the team members and family members at HPE. Brenda says that she's on a mission to make a difference with nutrition. She says that food is the most potent and affordable medicine we have, so she wants to empower us to put that power to work. She offers a program on Launch My Health called Optimizing Brain Health, which teaches us how to eat a brain-healthy diet, and that's our focus today. Brenda, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Changing our bad habits, especially when it comes to food, can really be difficult, but it's been proven time and time again that our diet, along with other healthy lifestyle factors, can truly affect our brain health and how clearly we think as we age. So why is it important for people to pay attention? How important is nutrition when it comes to maximizing our brain health?
According to research and my opinion, I believe nutrition is the most powerful tool that we each have in our own pocket. And according to national data, worldwide data, 80% of death and disease is related back to what we eat. So what we put on our fork truly does matter. And when we talk about brain health, there's specific nutrients and foods that we should eat and avoid that can impact how our brain functions, our mitochondria. And I know that kind of sounds like a mouthful to most people, but really important components to having a healthy brain and reducing our risk for getting these neurodegenerative diseases that can be really impactful, not only for the person, but also their families.
So from a nutritional standpoint, what causes brain degeneration? Is it that we're not eating the right stuff, or is it that we're eating too much of the wrong stuff?
It's a yes to both of those questions. I think, you know, one of the most important things to think about in developing brain diseases is what we eat and what we don't eat truly does matter. And some of the things that matter most are controlling our blood sugar. What happens with that is if we're eating too many carbohydrates, the wrong types of carbohydrates, our blood sugar goes up. And when that happens, we end up getting insulin resistance over time, and that impacts our brain. Another component of that is our mitochondria. That is a mouthful, and it basically it's the energy or the powerhouse of the cell. We have them all over our body, but they're heavily concentrated in our brain. And when our blood sugar is up and we have all different types of lifestyle factors that impact that, like not exercising and toxins, our mitochondria can get damaged. And that's what ends up leading to some of these really serious brain diseases.
So some people might blame their genes. So if you have a family history of diabetes or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, is it possible for one's diet to change kind of the trajectory of their lives?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all have our genes that really lay out the potential for our health. And it's like the gun is loaded with our genetics and our DNA. But our lifestyle and environment is really what pulls the trigger. And for many of these things, you do have control over how you map that destiny and what is your final destination. So by choosing the right foods that actually have some functional and protective benefits, and eliminating the ones that are causing some of the damage, we really can change the trajectory and outcome of getting some of these diseases like diabetes or Alzheimer's disease. And what we know now from the research is that Alzheimer's disease really is called type 3 diabetes and becomes a disease of metabolic health.
Well, Brenda, as I was preparing for this interview and meeting you, I actually went through your program on optimizing brain health on Launch My Health. I learned a whole lot. And one thing was really clear. It's not that difficult to adopt a brain healthy diet. And research shows that it works. So what keeps most of us from adopting this diet and making healthier choices?
In all of my years of experience working in healthcare, I think the most challenging thing for people is it's this kind of all or nothing mentality. Like I have to do everything perfectly, and then they throw in the towel if they can't do it perfectly. And what I like to encourage people to do is to take it one step at a time. So asking yourself the question, today, what can I do that can improve my health? What is the one thing? So like for me today, what is one thing I can do? I can drink green tea instead of coffee this morning. That's one thing I can do. I can journal. I can go for a walk. So just ask yourself, what is one thing that I can do today that's healthy and going to improve whatever your goal is, if it's to manage your blood sugar, improve your brain health, and then you can build on those goals. And don't try to flip the switch in one day, because that just is not sustainable. We know that from research. And you really have to build healthy habits. You know, an athlete didn't become a star athlete overnight. They had to practice. They needed coaching. They have to continually hone their craft. And the same thing with a healthy lifestyle. It really needs to be something that people build over time, and it takes practice, it takes experience, it takes dedication and focus. And so if you have a goal of improving your brain health, if you have a family history of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, whatever it happens to be, if you focus on improving your health and that goal and just taking it baby steps, one step at a time, you'll eventually build that healthy lifestyle that's going to prevent that disease or help you manage it if you do get that disease.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I know that one of the kind of hurdles for everybody is that nutritional information can get a bit confusing and technical. How do specific nutrients, like we read about omega-3 fatty acids, antioxidants, or B vitamins, how do they contribute to brain function and cognitive health?
So they all kind of have different functions. If we kind of group them in together into types, one of the things that we're looking at for brain health in particular is fats and the types of fats that we're consuming. The suggestion that I have, very simple for people, if they want to start getting into a healthier brain, preventing cognitive decline and some of these neurodegenerative diseases, start by making some swaps in your kitchen related to fats. So what we want to do is get rid of the omega-6 fatty acids, the omega-9 fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory, meaning they cause inflammation, and replace them with things that are anti-inflammatory and brain healthy. So that would be omega-3 fatty acids, which are found in fatty fish and vegan sources like walnuts and flaxseed, chia, hemp hearts. Those are great ways we can get omega-3s into our diet. And then if you're using oils that are plant-based oils that are seed oils, like corn oil, soybean oil, swap those out with things that are healthier, which would be avocado oil or olive oil. In 2024, there was a study that was released by JAMA that showed a 28% reduction in death from Alzheimer's disease just by consuming a half a tablespoon of olive oil per day. And this was, I think in the study, there was over 92,000 people.
Wow.
So if you can weave in some of these specific nutrients that are healthy fats into your diet on a daily basis, again, do those swaps in your kitchen. Get rid of the seed oils and bring in the olive oil. Very easy. You don't even have to change the way that you're cooking anything. You're just using a brain healthy oil. The second thing that I would do is try to consume foods that are rich in glucosinolates. Now that's a mouthful. So basically that's cruciferous vegetables. And by consuming these, it's like fly paper that attracts flies. So it's going to grab those toxins that are in your body and then you excrete them. And so that's a great way to just add something into your diet. We're not even talking about eliminating anything. Let's add in the good stuff. And thirdly, what I would add in is just any way you can get in these antioxidants, which are in plant-based foods, fruits and vegetables. So think about the rainbow, all the different colors. We have berries. We have different vegetables that are green. We have carrots. And try to get in a variety, as many as you can throughout the week. And start small with a goal and build on that. And that's going to help your body essentially from oxidation that happens. And that's like rusting of a car if you think about it. So that's part of that process that causes disease.
I can tell you that I've started to make changes in my own diet because of your program, like trying to eat more vegetables for meals and drinking at least 2 cups of green tea each day. I was never a tea drinker, but green tea with lemon is actually good. Let's talk generally about the foods we should be eating for a healthier brain. So let's make a grocery list of what seems to be kind of the brain-boosting superfoods. And let me ask you about different ones. First, let's start with the leafy green vegetables and broccoli. Why are things like spinach and kale and broccoli so important?
So those are, again, are rich in the glucosinolates. So that's going to grab the toxins and then you excrete them out through urine and feces.
In your program, you said that the minimum amount we should be eating of these leafy green vegetables and broccoli is about 4 to 6 servings per day, but ideally even more than that, 10 to 12 servings per day, both raw and cooked. That sounds like a lot. So help us understand, how big is a serving and what are some ways that we can start to get those 10 to 12 servings a day?
It sure does sound like a lot, and I'm going to admit I don't get that much. It's a process to get in those servings. And again, what you mentioned, the raw and the cooked, they have different nutrients that are available if they're raw or they're cooked. So it's good to have a variety of raw and cooked. And just work your way up and try to consume as many as you can. You can try to, puree them and put them in a smoothie. So there's different ways you can get that volume piece. But do not get hung up on the amount of the servings. Like, again, that black or white kind of like I'm achieving this goal or I'm not. Like, work your way up. And I, like you, Bob, I am in process of improving my own brain health too. My mom passed away from a neurodegenerative disease, Lewy body dementia. So it is, top of mind for me. Mm. And it is a process. So I totally hear you on the 10 to 12 servings. And any listeners gonna be like, I cannot do that. Just start and work your way up. And again, try to do different things that will make these vegetables appealing to you. If you've never roasted them, try roasting them. You can make different salads out of them. You can puree them into soups. You can puree them into different, like if you have a one pot meal, putting them in there and kind of even hiding it. And so there's different ways that we can add vegetables in that can help us reach that goal of 10 to 12.
Yeah, I loved your idea of slicing radishes, something that I never ate, and dipping them into something like guacamole or salsa or hummus instead of eating unhealthier options like potato chips. I thought that was really good.
Right, and if you have them like kind of pre-sliced like for the week, it makes it much easier because I know at the end of a workday, the last thing I want to be doing is chopping a bunch of stuff. So if I just take some time, like on a Sunday, that works for me, whatever works for people, that's great for them. But just take some time to get yourself ready for the week. You'll set yourself up for success.
Right. Are frozen vegetables just as healthy?
Absolutely. I would say don't overcomplicate vegetables, or if it's frozen, if it's fresh. Frozen vegetables are usually picked at their peak, so their nutrient density is usually really high. So if that works for you and it's easier, by all means, do it.
How about organic or non-organic? Does that matter? And what should we choose and why?
Organic and non-organic absolutely matters. However, I don't want to sound like you have to eat organic. It's going to be better to eat vegetables and fruits than not eat them. So if your path to eating healthier is not organic, that's okay too. But if you can afford organic and it works into your budget, that's going to be better. So what we're really looking at with organic is not having the glyphosate and the different fertilizers that are on some of these fruits and vegetables. And depending on the type of skin that they have, they may absorb more of the fertilizer or chemicals into them. And it doesn't matter if you peel them or not, it's inside the fruit or the vegetable. So that's kind of what determines if you should buy it organic or not. Organic.
You mentioned berries. Which berries should we be eating for mental clarity and why are they important?
I think the best berries are all berries, and you're getting those, the deep, rich colors in those contain polyphenols, and those are really good for our brain health and can actually help improve our brain function. When we look at overall a class of antioxidants, which is what polyphenols are, what they're doing is they're increasing the amount of BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, again, another mouthful, but that basically is Miracle-Gro for our brains. And so the more we can increase that BDNF production, the better. And we can do that through nutrition.
A Harvard study found that people who ate 2 servings of strawberries and blueberries every week delayed their memory decline by as much as 2.5 years. Just one of many studies that show that this works. Let's talk about beans. Soybeans, chickpeas, kidney beans are some of the best sources of B vitamins and their memory bolstering antioxidants. Is that right?
Yes. And, depending upon people's culture and backgrounds, they may be used to eating, legumes and different types of beans, and some maybe not. So it's a great way to start trying that and incorporating that into your diet. And again, I think with all of these nutrients, we want to find what works for us and what works in our household. So again, depending upon your background, maybe exploring some different types of ethnic foods and cultural types of recipes might be beneficial and really fun for your family too.
Absolutely. Okay, we're making our grocery list, whole grains.
So we want to avoid the processed grains, focus on whole grains, and really trying to keep that at the right amount as well. And we want the fiber from that. There's B vitamins. There's a lot of nutrients that are in whole grains. And when we're talking about avoiding processed grains, those have kind of that nutritious part of it stripped from the whole grain. So minimizing the amount of processed grains and focusing on whole grains and still watching the serving size of that. Generally, a serving size of a whole grain is only going to be about a half a cup cooked. So it's small. A lot of times we tend to overeat whole grains.
Oh, okay. How about fish? I know a lot of people would say, I'm not a fish eater, while others will say, I love seafood. Going through your program on optimizing brain health, I learned that the most important fatty acid for brain health is DHA. What is that and what should we be eating to get it?
So DHA is an omega-3 fatty acid, and we need to get that from our diet. The richest source, meaning the density of that, is going to be from fish. It's going to be in salmon. Salmon is one of the richest sources of it, but not everybody likes fish or has it actually available for them. So there's other ways we can get that. We can get that through a supplement as well. And we want it, the goal for that is to get 1,200 milligrams a day, 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams a day of DHA, omega-3 fatty acid.
I remember hearing that it's the omega-3, not omega-6 or 9. If you see the six, think nix the six.
Correct. That's because the way I always remember it. Nix the six. And the nine really is neutral, but there's no need to be buying a supplement with all of these different things in it. It just confuses the consumer. Focus on a high quality omega-3 fatty acid supplement if you cannot get it in your diet.
Yeah, very good. Okay, let's talk about olive oil, something that's important in the Mediterranean and the MIND diets. A 2022 study of more than 92,000 U.S. adults found that higher intakes of olive oil were associated with a 29% lower risk of dying from neurodegenerative disease and 8% to 34% lower risk of mortality overall when compared to those who never or rarely consume olive oil. Why is olive oil so important?
So olive oil is a monounsaturated fat, and it's a heart-healthy fat. And if we can try to find ways to get that into our diet, and again, there's people, I see this on social media all the time now, people just saying like, take a tablespoon of olive oil a day. And remember in this study, it was 7 grams of olive oil a day. What does 7 grams look like? Well, 7 grams is about a half a tablespoon. That's not very much oil, and it's 62 calories. So if you can find easy ways to get that into your diet, and again, you can just start swapping out some other oil and using olive oil, and that's an easy way to incorporate something that's going to be very healthy for you, not only for your brain, but also your heart. I mean, olive oil is just kind of like one of the best superfoods that are out there.
How about avocados? Avocados are a good fat, and it's rich in vitamins K, B, and C, right?
Yes. And a surprising thing, I mean, avocados are probably my most favorite food, and they're so creamy. They're delicious. I like just slicing one open. You know, eating it right out of the skin is delicious, and throwing, you know, maybe just a little bit of sea salt on there, a little pepper, absolutely delicious. And they're also really rich in fiber. They're about 6 grams, again, it depends on the size, but about 6 grams of fiber per avocado half serving. So it's really a heart healthy food, monounsaturated. It's creamy. You can add it to so many things and add really great flavor and texture. You can add it to a smoothie. You can slice it, throw it on top of some eggs, whatever you want to do. It's just kind of the, again, another one of those ultimate health foods.
Excellent. Okay, how about red bell peppers?
Red bell peppers are one of the richest foods, or rich in vitamin C. So really great source of phytonutrients and also fiber as well. So great for you. Red bell peppers, of note too, usually one of the things that we need to buy organic.
Interesting. Okay, how about nuts?
Specifically, when we're talking about nuts, we're talking about almonds and walnuts that are brain-healthy foods, and they contain neurotransmitters, and they're really vital for our memory. And they contain glutathione and also magnesium and vitamin E. A recent study that I read, over 50% of the population is deficient in magnesium. And magnesium is really important for our sleep. And sleep is important for our brain health.
Okay. Coffee and tea. We talked about tea. Some caffeine is good for focus and concentration. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it can be. It can be really good for focus and concentration. However, I will say, for a lot of people who are, you know, trying to avoid caffeine for other reasons or want an alternative, we certainly have a lot of people who are addicted to caffeine and consume too much, and that can happen very easily. They can try adaptogens. That it's that mushroom coffee you can buy, also known as lion's mane. You can try that and see if that can help your focus as well. So that's just another alternative.
Good. Okay, now let's talk about the things that we need to be eliminating from our diet, starting with the ultra-processed foods. These foods make up an estimated 73% of the U.S. food supply. Look at the ingredients list when you buy something at the store, and generally, if there's this long list of ingredients, especially hard-to-pronounce ingredients, chances are the food is ultra-processed. What are some samples of what some of those things that we shouldn't be eating?
I think it's, you know, really easy for people, again, like you just mentioned, to identify ultra-processed food. It's the cakes, it's the pastries, it's the cookies, the crackers. But what I want people to realize, too, about ultra-processed foods is not to demonize them so much that they feel a lot of shame about eating them. If you can move your way, again, starting with a goal, maybe you're reducing the amount of ultra-processed foods and moving your way towards more whole fresh foods, that's the path that you need to be on. And I want to give people an example of what an ultra-processed food is and what a processed food is, because they're different. A processed food, we'll use like corn, for example. A whole food is corn. Processed corn would be cornmeal. There's been some processing done to it, but not added ingredients. But then when we get to a corn tortilla with additional ingredients, we're not talking about a homemade one, but one that you probably buy in the grocery store, there's additional ingredients like stabilizers, coloring, preservatives. That would be considered ultra-processed.
Yeah, a lot of times, too, you'll even be trying to buy something that appears healthy. If you look at the label, it probably has the word health on it. Some of these health bars. Actually, if you look at the labels really closely, you'll find out that they are ultra-processed foods.
Absolutely. That you bring up a great point. Probably one of the most frequent questions that we get is, how are protein bars good for me? Are protein powders good for me? You know, I think protein bars are okay on occasion. It's a great way to have something that's portable. If you need to have something on the go, you don't have refrigeration, that type of thing. But to have that incorporated into your diet on a daily basis, I would say to look at alternative ways to get those nutrients that you're looking for. Because they are very usually ultra-processed and contain a lot of ingredients that we don't necessarily want to be eating. And like you mentioned, things that we cannot pronounce.
Okay, we've all heard that we shouldn't be drinking sugary drinks, but for many, it's just a habit that's hard to break. They're not good for our teeth, our stomach. They're not good for our brain health either. Soft drinks contain high amounts of sugar, which can contribute to weight gain, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, tooth decay, and many other health issues. Talk about sugars, I guess, in general. I think glucose is an important source of energy for your brain, but the amount of sugar in processed baked goods is really unhealthy, right?
Right. So, you know, there's some really scary statistics out there. Over 50% of the population consumes a sugary beverage daily. And that's one of the highest sources of sugar in our diets is beverages. So that's a great place for people to start if they're looking to improve their health, is just eliminate or reduce the amount of sugary beverages. And again, what happens in particular when we're looking at brain health is we consume all this added, and we're talking about added sugar here, added sugar, our blood sugar goes up. And in response to that, our body releases insulin from our pancreas. And then over time, we become insulin resistant. So that blood sugar just stays up. And of course, there's a direct pathway to our brain with that. And so that in turn is what's producing these problems with our mitochondria. So we get the mitochondrial damage and inflammation in our brain. And that's where that type 3 diabetes comes from with Alzheimer's disease. So we're talking about that high blood sugar, inflammation, mitochondrial damage in the brain. So when I talked earlier about those three food groups to really focus on, the fourth thing that I would say is to really manage your blood sugar and get that under control. And one easy way to do that is just to reduce the sugar, the added sugar that you're consuming, and start with one thing that you can identify in your diet and reduce the amount of sugar that you're eating.
How do carbohydrates affect our blood sugar?
So carbohydrates affect our blood sugar by raising it. So any carbohydrate, whether it is blueberries or blackberries or a pastry or quinoa, are all going to impact our blood sugar. But how they impact our blood sugar is different. So we call that the glycemic index of foods. And we want to try to have a lower glycemic index for each food that we eat. That means the blood sugar is going to go up slower. We don't want that really roller coaster kind of up high, down low, up high, down low. We want to be on that kiddie coaster where our blood sugar is stable. So eating things like, say, quinoa, for example, is rich in fiber. And pairing that with some other foods like a fat and a protein is going to allow our body to digest those foods slower. And you're going to have less of that, again, roller coaster up and down with our blood sugar and have it be more stable. Now, foods with a really high glycemic index, things like a pastry or having a sugary treat like a candy, is going to cause that rapid increase in our blood sugar, and it's going to cause that insulin release, and the blood sugar is going to drop, and then usually we're hungry then. It causes some issues with our hormones as well, like leptin and ghrelin, and how we feel hunger, and then that just starts that whole roller coaster with our blood sugar.
Going back to olives, eat olives as part of a snack. Use recommended oils in your cooking. Make your own salad dressing, right?
Right. And that's a great way, as we talked about earlier, with the olive oil and the study that came out on that. That is a really easy way to get olive oil into your diet, is to make your own salad dressing. I like to use just like even a little Old Spice jar and throw some olive oil in there, balsamic vinegar and spices that you want, a little salt. And you can just shake that up and throw that in a salad. The other thing that oils do is that they help you absorb nutrients. So when you have a salad, for instance, there's so many phytonutrients and vitamins and minerals in there, and the fat helps you absorb those.
I believe that you suggest eating a healthy fat and protein for every meal and snack. What does that look like?
So by pairing those, all of those things together, you're going to help control your blood sugar. So pairing a fat with a protein, likely for people to a carbohydrate. I mean, that could be, say, a piece of whole grain bread with avocado. And then you could have some type of protein source on there of your choice as well, whatever that looks like for you.
Good. Another important part of this discussion is detoxifying our bodies. We talked about it a little bit when we were talking about organic vegetables and fruit. We're starting to hear more and more about alcoholic beverages and their link to cancers, and how countries like Ireland, Thailand, Norway, U.S. are all talking about putting warning labels on alcoholic beverages. I want to know your thoughts on alcohol.
You know, I think if you would have asked me this 10 years ago, I would have had a different answer. But as you mentioned, the research that is coming out today on alcohol, it is just more and more prevalent that we're seeing more diseases associated with alcohol, and that even moderate drinking can be detrimental to our health. And it's not just our brain health. It's like you mentioned, cancer. So, and there is with Generation Z coming out, they're more inclined to go to the mocktails. And I just recently read that wine sales are down, spirit sales are down as well. So there's this trend just with our populations of decreasing our alcoholic beverage consumption across the board.
Wow. Okay. As we talk about detoxifying our bodies, there are many other toxins in our bodies, right? In fact, your program says that it's really impossible for people to completely avoid toxins 100% of the time, because they're in our air, they're in our water, food, skincare products, and even our house cleaning chemicals. Is that right?
Yes, there are toxins, all different types of toxins in basically everything that we use. So it can seem really overwhelming to start to think about, well, how do I reduce or limit my toxin exposure? And again, I would say one step at a time. I'm in the process of this for myself. My mom, I mentioned earlier, she passed away. She had Lewy body dementia. And when she was in that process of getting diagnosed with that, I really wanted an answer of why does she have this? She just doesn't fit the profile. And so I started digging in deeper, and I had her blood tested for heavy metals, and she ended up being toxic and arsenic. And this was a huge surprise to me. We still don't necessarily know where that came from, but my presumption is it probably was the water. And again, I think what this demonstrates is that each body is unique and different. So my dad and my sister and I, we all lived in the same household, and my mom was toxic and arsenic. I had my blood tested. I am not toxic and arsenic. I didn't have any, which is really good news for me. But I think it's important for all of us to look at what is in our environment. What are we using in our households? What is our water safe to drink? These are all things that we can control to a certain degree. At the moment, I'm moving. And so I took this opportunity to go through my house, and I threw out a construction bag size full of plastic containers and Teflon coated pans that were kind of way back. I haven't been using them, but eliminated all of that from my household. So these are just ways that we can control the amount of toxin exposure. And I want to really highlight for people, please do not microwave in plastic. If you're using plastic containers and you can see it's like pebbled and dented in the bottom of it, and you've been microwaving, say, your lunch that you're bringing to work, just switch over to glass containers. If you're worried about them breaking, you can buy them with silicone on the outside. But just do not microwave and eat food that has been heated in plastic. Don't put it in the microwave. The latest research that I read is that all of us consume on average about a credit card's worth of plastic a month.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, I want to also talk about hydration. How important is hydration?
Well, hydration is important because it's a way that we eliminate toxins from our body. We do that through urine. So making sure that we're staying hydrated so that we can eliminate these toxins is really important.
Overall now, how do you recommend? We talked about all those things that we need to put on our grocery list, the things that we need to eliminate from our diets. How do you recommend someone get started in making a change to a healthy brain diet?
I think the first thing that people should do is, again, ask themselves the question, what can I do today, knowing what I know? I'm educated now. I have a list of things that I can do to improve my brain health. What is it? What do I feel motivated to start with? What can I do that's going to be an easy win for me? And start there. And again, I would take those three things, try to consume healthy fats. So swapping out the fats that are pro-inflammatory and replacing them with the good fats and making sure you're getting omega-3 fatty acids. And then try to consume the foods that contain glucosinolates and other antioxidants. And those are going to help boost your brain's BDNF, that brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's the Miracle-Gro for your brain. And lastly, control your blood sugar, making sure that you're reducing the amount of sugar. Do that formula with having a fat and a protein together and stay on that kiddie coaster instead of that roller coaster that has the highs and the lows. And those are three great places to start. And find something that just resonates with you. Maybe it's like you mentioned that you're doing, Bob, the green tea. You know, that's a great place to start, and you don't have to do it all at one time. Just take it one piece at a time.
Yeah, that was one thing that I really did take from your program is start where you are and try to improve. And the key is consistency. If you miss a day of eating well, don't be hard on yourself. Don't give up, but just keep improving day by day. So before we close, a quick plug for your Launch My Health platform, and specifically the Optimizing Brain Health program. Who do you recommend take this course?
Well, of course, I would say everyone. But I would say if you have any family member with a neurodegenerative disease, like Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's, MS, educate yourself, take this course. I also want to highlight, if you are in your 40s and your 50s, the time is now to start taking action to prevent these diseases. These take decades to develop. So you need to start now, even better if you're in your 20s or 30s, and with your children too. It's always best to start as young as you can and have the whole household involved. So again, start early, and it really designed for people who are really concerned about developing one of these diseases.
I'm curious, how long does it take most people to go through the course? I think for me, it took about a month. And you start by tracking your meals for 3 days to see what maybe you should be thinking about eliminating.
I would say there's probably, just like you, Bob, the person who takes about a month to go through it, and they're working through the course as designed. But the other way that people can take the course too is they can do it like Netflix style, and they can watch all the videos at once. I know I'm kind of the person, like, I want all the information. I want to absorb it. And then they can print the workbook, or they can look at it, save it on their desktop and work through it that way on their own and go back and reference the videos as they go through it. But some people can't wait and they want to watch it all at once, and that's okay too. So either or, whichever works for your lifestyle.
And one more important note that I want to make, even though you're a nutrition expert, would you agree that people with digestive issues or any underlying health conditions or family history of things like MS or ALS or Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, those kind of people really need to talk to their doctors before making any major dietary decisions. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I would highly recommend, if you have a family history of any of those things or have any of those conditions going on right now, talk to your provider, meet with a dietitian, and get a specific plan designed for you and what's going to work in your household, what's going to work for your budget. There's a lot of nuances to what we're talking about. You might be on specific medications. You might have a vitamin deficiency. So all of those things play into what your plan should be. What we talked about today are just some general guidelines for people to get started. But again, if you do have any specific concerns or underlying health conditions, you want to have that expert advice in creating a plan.
Thanks so much, Brenda. It's been great talking to you, and this is such important stuff.
Thank you.
Just a reminder for HPE team members and their families, you are able to access WellBeats and all of the Launch My Health content for free, including Brendan Navin's program on optimizing brain health. The program includes a workbook where you can set goals and easy daily assignments to help you take steps towards a brain-healthier diet. The first step to eating a brain-healthy diet is to start paying attention to how eating different foods makes you feel, not just now, but tomorrow as well. When most people eat what's known as a clean diet, they can't believe how much better they feel both physically and emotionally, and how much worse they feel when they reintroduce those foods that are known to enhance inflammation. So just prove it to yourself. When it comes to maximizing your brain health, we also know the importance of socialization, right? Getting together with friends can make a real difference. So consider inviting a friend to dinner and enjoy trying out some new brain-healthy meals together. As always, I want to remind HPE team members that there are many great resources like WellBeats and Brendan Nevin's Launch My Health that can provide lessons and recipes that can help you live a longer, healthier, and happier life. And it's all available to you and your family members in the HPE Global Wellness Program. If you're in the U.S., go to myhperewards.com. And if you're outside the U.S., you'll find them on the Global Wellness page. My thanks to Brendan Navin, founder and president of Launch My Health. And as always, thank you for taking the time to listen and learn. Until next time, eat well and be well. Please take good care of yourself. Let's talk again soon.